session number 23441, reel 4.
Mr. Wildman, reel 4.
Going to where I was, and next thing I know, we're hearing Tom Spencer say to me, "You haven't got it in the face, have you, Slim?" And I realised I'd lain in the bottom of the trench with my hands over my face, but no, I've got a small cut up here somewhere, not much. And the tech house came over and said he'd make arrangements for us to move out when he was ready, he'd let us know, but he was never able to let us know because the next lot came in and landed in this trench. And from then on, it was a case of following wherever the war took us.
Where did it take you?
Well, down around Helmont, that area of Roumont, that area's name, into Germany. Giraffe. We'd been in with the Canadians, as I say, we went in with everybody, we were every army too. We were in with supporting the Canadians when we were ordered to move south to take over support of the 28th Infantry Division, the American Army. And we found that they'd, I'm afraid the Americans had, I know he's been criticising them, but they had made a very bad error. And their brigadier wanted my squadron leader to take our squadron up the same road that he sent his unit up the day before. His unit was still up that road, all of them, completely destroyed. And he wanted us to go up the same road. Our squadron leader said, "No way." Our brigadier came down, he said, "No way are they going up that road like that. Not until we're prepared, properly prepared." So we waited till the other two regiments, the brigade, came down, and they were sent out as scouts, you know, on the slightly higher ground. When everything was set, then we went up that road. We lost one tank. Well, nobody killed, wounded, but nobody killed him. And we took the objective.
Where was that?
That was a village called Bochum, outside of Giraffe style, just into Germany. Sorry. The interesting thing that happened there, one of the troop commanders reported his tank was playing up. So would I come and see to it? So went to where his tank was. His tank had pulled his tank back in the reserve. He was point troop, but he had his tank back to see about the repair. Tight against the billet they were using, and I started. All it needed was calibration, and I was calibrating the engine. Well, as they were, the crew were down in this billet, just rested up. I didn't think anything of it. Till all of a sudden, one or two bricks started falling on my head. And when I looked up, the parapet of the building that we were against was beginning to collapse. And then I realised the mortar shells were landing all over the place. What was happening? I was running this engine, and the Germans were trying to find the engine. So I thought it was better, not much good staying up there then. So I decided to go down into the billet with them. I had to go down there, I had to go down through the house, a sharp right turn, sharp 180 degree turn down the steps into the cellar. And as I went down there, I saw one of the mortar shells hit an outbuilding outside the kitchen and blew what was ever in that outbuilding up to smithereens. Then I slipped on the top step going down, so I rolled down the steps. Along comes a certain Bill Mawson, came running up to me, and I thought he was going to ask if I was all right. But what he said was, "Slim, did you see if my chicken's cooking all right up there?" He had chicken cooking, called a liberated casserole, chicken casserole, cooking in his house stove. Had just taken the direct hit. He was more concerned about his chicken than me falling down the stairs. So I'm afraid I told him what I thought about him. And then when he realised his chicken had gone for a Burton, he got very angry. And really, that's about all you can say. That sort of thing happened time and time. Little things happen. What can you say? They happen to everybody. Everybody had the same sort of things happen. There were times when you wondered what you were doing there, and then there were times when you knew what you were doing there. Because being assault regiments, we were up the front quite often. And some of our echelon had to go into Belsen, and they saw Belsen. And I'm afraid we weren't very happy with the Germans after that.
But you didn't go in?
No, because we were assault troops, but only the echelon troops that went into the tanks, the forward echelon as such, couldn't be spared to that sort of duties. There was the things like my brother was going to try to clear it up and do what they could. Not that they could do very much. There was one particular smaller camp that we liberated, and our brigadier made the villagers go through the camp and see what the conditions were. He then said to them, "You've seen the conditions that these people are now under. They want food. You can't give them too much food because they can't take it, but they want clothing. They want something that gives them comfort for a little bit of time. So I'm going to send some lorries down into the village, and I want food, I want clothing and anything for them." So they sent the lorries down. He got about enough stuff to just barely cover that map of the whole village. They called them all together again. He said, "I gave you the chance. This time the lorries are coming down again, but each lorry will have a tank with it, and we'll take what we want." Some blokes went into one house, and they were looking at this house. Though these people, "No, they've got nothing. No, we've got nothing at all. No." One of the trades says, "Sir," spoken to an officer, "look at that shading on that wall. Doesn't it fit that cupboard there?" "Yes, it does. Move that cupboard." Inside that cupboard was a door, and that place was fully stocked with food and everything. So we took everything that was in that cupboard, the whole lot left, and just enough for one meal. I said, "You're on your own now, and that's it." So I'm afraid we haven't a great love for Germans when I saw there.
Where was that?
I was up not far from Belsen, up towards Riverboyd, in that area.
What about the Rhine crossing? Do you have any memories of that?
Yes, we've got one rather comical incident about the Rhine crossing. When we moved up there to, because we had to wait for that bridge to be built, it was a very tough bridge. We leaguered up by the side of the rail tracks that had been damaged. You know, the bombing and that had damaged it. A party of German prisoners were repairing that track, including some German officers working on the track. Now, as I said before, our brigadier used to tell us everything, and we knew what the procedure was going to be and what was going to happen. But of course, this German didn't know that. And we said to him, "Well, you as an officer can't order your men to do that job, because that railway line is a weapon of war." He said, "We know that, but we're repairing this line for when we push you back." He said, but you won't push back. Listen to that sound over there. Can't you hear those guns firing? He said, yes, I can hear the guns firing. But that's us destroying your airborne. He said, oh, no, it's not. That's us crossing the Rhine. So he said, when we cross it, if things are going well, we'll soon find out, knowing full well that within a few minutes the airborne reinforcements will come over. And as they flew over, these airborne come up, these Germans said, look at them, those brave lads of yours there, they're all going to their death landing over there. They haven't got a chance. They were so indoctrinated that they... We said, any minute now, we're going to hear 13 Baker, report to Victor now. He said, what's that mean? That means to say, as soon as that call comes over on our radio, we will move, and our next stop will be on the other side of the Rhine. No, never happened. 13 Baker, report to Roger Victor now. So well, there you are, we're on our way, we're going to cross the Rhine now. He couldn't see it. He was absolutely certain that we would be beaten back then.
Were you confident in the campaign?
I suppose we were by that time. I mean, we'd lost men. We were losing men. We lost a good men. But actually, my squadron, I think my squadron was the last to lose an officer in action over there. Little Ted Moulding would die. That's just before we went into Bremen. We had a good regiment, had a good bunch of lads, and the reinforcements that came in were very quickly indoctrinated into the spirit of the cavalry. It might sound a bit so highfalutin, say the cavalry, but we did consider ourselves the best. The cavalry was the cream in the army, in our opinion, and we did have such a good regiment. I don't think we really had any. The only time we had any bad experiences, and now we've got to go back right back almost to the start, is when we got our new commanding officer shortly before, when we started to switch around. We were given a commanding officer who was a real martinet. He was tough, and no matter who you were, what you were, if you were in trouble with him, you were in trouble. To the extent that I got 21 days CB from him, and I consider that he was completely wrong, because he said I was riding with more than head and shoulders exposed outside the tank whilst in command. He was a witness. He was a charging officer and the judge. And I protested. I thought that was completely unfair.
This was in England, isn't it?
It was in England, yeah. My squadron leader, we were marched out, my squadron leader, that was him I was talking about, like, keep your head down, young Slim. Don't be stupid, young Slim. He was talking to my, from behind me. When I was marched out, the squadron leader said, you want a brigadier's interview then, Wellman? I said, yes, I do. Right, he said, I'll get it done for you. So I had a brigadier's interview. It took me 3 days to see the brigadier. Brigadier to listen to the whole story. And then suddenly he tore up the sheet. I said, well, I said, who was in command of the tank? I said, well, I was. Then he started writing down a new charge. Whilst in command, did allow Trooper Gallup. That was a charge I had no argument. I couldn't argue that one at all.
And which charge? Which charge?
Of being in command of a tank, allowing the trooper to ride in a dangerous position. Because Tex was sitting on top of the tank, which of course he shouldn't have been. Anyway, Brigadier Ellis said, how long have you been waiting to see me? I said, well, it's 3 days, sir. Now, right, 3 days, CB. In other words, it was finished. No longer the other 18 days I was supposed to do, that was all scrubbed. He was a bloody good brigadier, that man.
What was his name?
Prior Palmer. One of the brothers, Prior Palmer. I'm not certain which his initials were. There was two of them. Both commanded the same brigade at one time, at different times. You know the champion three-day event driver in the green? She was his daughter. He was a good chap.
Any more recollections of pushing through Germany?
Can't say we had a great deal, because it was just moving fast all the time. We very rarely stopped anywhere, if you know what I mean. Being a forward troop, we were on the move so fast. Once we got out of once the move started through the Reichswald, mind you, that was a bad area, through the Reichswald forest, that was bad. But once we got away from the Reichswald and crossed the Rhine, and really I didn't have that much time.
You haven't given me any Reichswald memories.
Oh. That was just one of those things. Yeah, what we remember about the Reichswald, we were first with the Canadians, then we went over the British units, the 53rd Welsh Division, going for the Reichswald with them, and then it decided that the Welsh Division had enough, so they pulled them back out, brought the 51st in. Well, we then had to go over the 51st. With the 53rd, they pulled them out and pushed us back in the game with the 51st Division, going through the Reichswald. The one sad thing about the Reichswald, as far as we're concerned, one young lad, young Barry Waldron, was knocked out of his tank on D-Day. He was the only man to get out of his tank. And got knocked out two more times. He was knocked out. The squadron leader wanted to send him back to England, give him a couple of tapes on his arm, and send him back to England as an instructor, because he thought he'd had enough. He'd knocked out of three tanks. And Barry wouldn't do it. Insisted on going into the Reichswald battle with the squadron. He didn't get out of the fourth one.
Didn't get out of what?
The fourth tank. He lays buried in the Reichswald Forest Cemetery now. He just seemed to think because he got out three times, he was. Do what?
Omnipotent.
Yeah. I think one of the strangest things that did happen to us is that in England, before, when we got down to Gosport, got together at Gosport, we got attached to us two Remy and one Signal Corps man to come with the forward echelons. The forward echelon consisted of nine people, two vehicles, nine persons. And so six from the regiment, two from Remy, and one from Signals. The Remy corporal was talking about his girlfriend, and we were pulling his leg about it. And we said, "Why don't you marry the girl?" He said, "I don't want to leave a widow." We said, "Don't be silly, you're not going to leave a widow. We got the cushy job in the regiment, us." Mind you, we didn't know what we were in for at the time. But anyway, no, he wasn't going to get married. So we went we landed in France. We came to Montpasson. I was doing wireless watch. We used to share wireless watch between the two vehicles, rather than have two men sitting down all the time. One man could do it for the two vehicles. And I got a request for the ARV to go forward. I wrote the map reference down and gave it to this corporal, or his sergeant by then, and he went up that morning, came back again, and then he said, "Slim, remember what we were saying in Gosport about me not making it, so she did. Well, this is it, this is the place. He said, Ray, you've been up there. He said, I know. And this is the place. Anyway, once again, the wireless watch came in. And once again, I took the map reference. I gave it to Ray. And said, Patterson, get off the vehicle. Patterson said, why? You want me up there? No, I don't want to take any spare pods. You stay behind. And it was it. He was killed on the top of that hill. What made him think, and what made him think that that was the very place to see it and say, this is the place? You can't, you know, something you can't understand.
How did your war finish up in Germany?
Well, it finished up pretty well. We finished up in the end down in the area of Wiedenberg, the Harz Mountains, on border patrol, running up and down the border patrol with the Russians, fun and games with them as the border patrol people. And then they set up that Harz Mountains skiing camp, and we used to have a lot to do with the skiing camp. And then we got the speedway going. It was all, apart from exercises and bits and pieces, a lot of it was showing the march, showing the flag, that sort of thing.
How did you get on with German civilians after VE Day?
Had very little to do with them. I did. Very little to do with them. I'm afraid I had too many memories. Quite honest. The only Germans we saw were those who were working in the camp. And they were specials. To quote an example, when I left the army and went to work, I worked in the building trade. I was used to be in charge of Sainsbury's shops, doing Sainsbury's shops. And I was given the address of a place to go to up in, when we went to do a shop up in the Berlin area. Went into there. This woman answered the door. Familiar, but I couldn't quite place it. So anyway, she took us in. Next day, I spoke to her husband and said I wanted to get to one place in Erdington where one of our little group lived. He'd been wounded, very badly wounded on Mount Passon, and I wanted to go and see how he was. So this chap said, what was your regiment? And I said, I was 30th Radiant Hussars. Oh, he said, I was in 3 RHA. I said, oh, they were in the next line to us at Wolfenbottel. He said, that's right. Don't you recognise my wife? I said, no. She came down to our living room. So I went down to her living room, and we lodgers were never allowed in that living room, having a holy of holies. And there was this photograph on the wall. I looked at it. See that photograph? What do you think about it? And I looked at it. I said, canteen. She said, yes. My wife was one of your canteen workers. What I used to do, all our civilian workers had to be vetted. She'd been in prison for anti-Nazi views. And she'd had a bad time. Now she married this artilleryman and come over to England. And so he turned around and he said to her, he's a Lily White, which is our nickname. The regiment's nickname was the Lily White. She said, Lily White. And she looked at him. Oh, she said, slim. After that, anything I wanted in the house was mine. I just had to say I want, and I got. All the other chaps would say, where did you get all that? Why did you get all that brandy? We don't get any. Why do you get?
How do you feel now about having served with the 13th, 18th Hussars in the Second World War?
I would say that it was the best regiment one could ever be in, and it still is. It's no longer the 13th, 18th Hussars, of course, it's the Light Dragoons, or associated, now part of the Light Dragoons. But there's still a damn good lot of lads. I mean, our officer commanding home headquarters, You'd have to go a long way to find a better man, wouldn't you? He's great. So I think if you really, he would be one man to speak to, actually. Gary Locker. There's no doubt about it. The regiment was good. And I suppose there were some bad apples amongst it, but very few. Very few indeed. I mean, the sabres, like, on the very last day of one man's service, Bob Cruddas, he was a time serving 22-year trooper. Well, he wasn't a trooper, he was a trumpeter. So in other words, he'd been in the army 22 years and still got no proper rank. But he was a good soldier and a good trumpeter. In his very last day in the regiment, he'd been associated with an ATS girl. And along came a certain sergeant, the one person that we didn't like in the regiment, who took this girl off of his hands. And Bob got upset about this. So the next morning, he goes to the Silent Smith, that evening, he went to the Silent Smith to try and speak to the sergeant. The sergeant came down, and I'm afraid Bob gave him a right pasting. Next morning, everybody's on parade, Bob's got his kit ready to leave the regiment. This sergeant appears on parade with his face all done up and everything, complains to the RSM that this trumpeter had hit him. Every sergeant in that sergeant's mess, that they saw this sergeant fall down the stairs.
What do you mean you took the girl off his hands?
Well, the girl thought the sergeant got more money than he's got. Every sergeant said he's falling fall down the stairs. The RSN knew full well what had happened. Because the RSN turned around to Bob and said, "There you are, Cruddas. I've known you a long while now, 22 years, isn't it?" He says, "Yeah. Now get yourself on that lorry and get out of my sight before I tell these bloody sergeants I don't believe a word they've said." That was the regiment.